Hello and welcome to Story Selling, a series where we're exploring the skill of effective storytelling within the field of product marketing. Each episode, we will focus on one of the four different stages of the storytelling process: the story, the speaker, the listener, and the response. In this episode, we're going to be focusing on the response, specifically on how to gather effective feedback and insights before crafting your next product story or campaign. For this, I am joined by Andreas Conrad, former Adidas product marketer, senior consultant at Capgemini, and an expert in the areas of sports, technology, and sustainability. Hi, Andy. How are you doing today?
Hi, Elliot. Good to see you. Yeah, I'm very good. Thanks.
How
are you doing?
Yeah, really well. Thanks. First of all, really appreciate you taking the time to speak to me. I told you ahead of time that I was doing some research into product marketing and product marketing storytelling. And I thought I'd start by that research by just reaching out to people who I think are really strong and experienced in that subject. And obviously your name came to mind. We work together at Adidas. We're both creating products at Adidas and working on different product stories. But also you've had a really great career outside of the sports world and the product world as well. And so you've had a lot of experience creating stories. And maybe that's a good place to start. Maybe you can give a quick introduction to your kind of career and experience up to date.
Yeah, sure. So I think in my career, I created over 1,000 products with my teams. Oh. Just hold on here, separate call. I'm sorry for that. No worries. Yeah. And probably we brought to the market more than 10,000 products. Wow. Yeah. So that's a lot of products and a lot of stories to bring to market. Obviously, it was with Adidas. So on footwear, hardware, apparel, you name it. Yeah, so all the categories. Yeah, I think some excursions then into the tech scene, and now as a managing consultant here at Capgemini. That's what I'm doing right now. So I'm staying true to the sports and fashion business. Yeah, so trying to give some external point of view on those topics and help the clients.
That's great. And you mentioned footwear was a big part of your life. I remember when we were working together, and I've mentioned earlier in the podcast, like how footwear is almost a hero product. It's something that comes back again and again. I remember wearing the Adidas Predator when I was in school, and yet you could still go to Adidas stores and buy them right now. So it's something that comes back again and again. That's why I thought you would be a perfect choice for one part of storytelling, which I want to talk about, which is about the response. So when we think about storytelling, we have the person telling the story, we have the story itself, and we have the person listening and accepting it. And then finally, we have the feedback. And when it comes to those hero products, that becomes really important because you're having to anniversary that product again and again to make it better, to make it more relevant to a new consumer. And so actually feedback to those product stories and those thousands of products you work on is even more important than creating one-off products. Did you have a process for when you were working in footwear of seeing and judging which shoes worked better than others?
I think there's not one process to follow, but it's rather something which has evolved over time and I'm still learning. Mm-hmm. So I think there is, my approach was always to try to kind of understand and immerse myself into the respective space and consumer or user, yeah, whatever it is. So I think I had the honor to work at Adidas from kind of an end-to-end perspective. Yeah, I think that describes my process pretty well. So from that kind of blank sheet of paper, if you will, mm-hmm. You start sketching out some elements of who are your target consumers, what's probably the pain point they're having, the needs, the wants, and maybe the unknown desires even. And from there on, you start to have some hypothesis. Yeah, obviously, if you have an existing product, you take all the things you know from the product into account. So that's, for example, going to the professional players. If you have a functional boot, like a mm-hmm. football boot, it's extremely challenging to have for the top athletes in the world the best performing shoe, because if a stud breaks loose or if you have an outsole break, then you have a problem if it's in the Champions League final. Mm-hmm. And I had the honor and pleasure to work with Messi. So, undoubtedly one of the best players in the world. So taking his feedback into consideration was one of the things I think extremely important. At the same time, You go to do, for example, a woman's shoe, yeah, or maybe for even a young girl's shoe, and you fly to the US, yeah, and you go to a random kind of park, mm-hmm. and you just talk to a young girl, you know, 10 years old, and you show her a couple of shoes, yeah. You also take that too into consideration. And you go to the customer service, for example, you go to all the piles of used shoes, you know, and you talk to the customer service teams there who deal with the client complaints all the time. And from there onwards, of course, you do have like many, many, many different kind of bits and pieces you can piece together. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that describes really the process pretty well, that it's up to you.
Yeah,
to really master that kind of process, because I think what you can do is actually setting up all those kind of informations, that notions, that research, yeah. But what comes out of that, you can't predict, you know. Sometimes it's just this one conversation, is one insight that gives you basically the fantastic story and really that kind of innovative boost.
Yeah, and it's true. Sometimes the you know, you go in with a biased opinion, you want them to say a certain thing because maybe the product's one way, and you have to be prepared if the feedback goes against everything that you're trying to build, then you have to throw it out and start again, or at least be prepared to do that. I think it's really interesting talking about football boots as an example for product storytelling, because one of the things we've talked about in earlier episodes is personas and segmentation. So really understanding your audience, and that they're not one person or one being, that they're split into dozens of different personas. And it's interesting to look at footballers, they literally create that anyway as part of their story. So you might have be aimed at one 35-year-old UK guy, using myself as an example. But depending on what type of player you are, a completely different boot and a different story. So if you're a fast winger, you want light shoes. And if you're more stable central defender or central midfielder, maybe you want a different shoe, and a goalkeeper, and so on and so on. And not just, obviously, the features and the technological benefits change, that makes sense. But it's amazing how much things like design and colors would change. For example, it's always those fast players who would have really bright neon colors. And that shows you how that story is coming to life by understanding that, yeah, usually that younger consumer, the faster, the winger, the flair player is going to want flair boots. So it was really interesting to see that come to life. It's a really good example, I think, football boots, of how one product can tell many different stories at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And you talked very, you mentioned before the working directly with Leo Messi. I mean, that's an interesting person to get feedback from when it comes to a story. You know, usually when it comes to product storytelling, we're focusing completely on the audience. And actually, it's interesting because it highlights that there's actually feedback from other key people within that process. It's not just your target consumer, but someone like Leo Messi. How do you go about that process directly with an athlete? You know, it must be an interesting process, knowing that ultimately they might have the power in and also they have a very strong opinion about what they want that actually might not be what Adidas wants, or maybe what the consumer wants as well.
Yeah, that's an interesting one, Elliot. I think it's about relationships. Mm-hmm. So I think you have to establish a relation with the respective player or players. Yeah, so it wasn't only about Messi, but it was all, you know, a lot of players like Arjen Robben, Thomas Müller, Philipp Lahm at the time. Yeah, so you have so many different players, and when you're responsible for one specific boot, which is for Leo Messi, that's then one player to manage. If you have like a whole franchise, like the F50 back in the days, you have plenty of players. Yeah, and so the feedbacks are very different. I remember there was one player from Real Madrid. He had a huge problem with exactly this kind of boot you see in the background here, uh-huh. as a cavity. So it's the My Coach device we put into that. Yeah. And he still is like one of the best strikers in the world. And he had some problems with the cavity because it actually had some mud sticking to the outsole. So he kind of had the feeling it slips. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Other players didn't have that problem. But if one of your key players has that problem, what do you do then in the subsequent kind of iterations of your boots? Mm-hmm. And that's some very serious conversations you have to have. because it might be like for the majority of players, okay, but if a certain amount of players and quality of players has a problem, you need to look at it and you need to improve it for sure, because you want to satisfy all your players, that's clear. But sometimes the answer is not so easy, right? Yeah, sometimes you have to make tough decisions. So I think taking that that feedback from the players into account, also understanding what is the background, why are they saying that? Sometimes they want to change, you know, the sponsor. Yeah, it's all about the money, and they tell you the boot is bad, even though it's good. Yeah. There's so many nitty gritty things that could happen, but I guess this is the challenge of a good product manager, that you actually understand the dynamics of that kind of player environment. Mm-hmm. You understand clearly the benefits and the issues you have with a certain product. Yeah, and out of that, basically deliver the next kind of iteration or innovation.
Sure, and it's interesting because we talk a lot about the feedback we're receiving from opinions from either the audience or for the athletes or even the managers involved. But another point is actually the feedback from actually testing. So actually taking the product and actually getting data and taking out there. Could you go through us what a normal testing process would have been like for an Adidas football boot, and how you actually use that information to improve your product and your product stories?
Yeah, sure. So taking a typical development process of 2 years as an example, you would have then different kind of testing rounds. We're talking about the top boots. We're talking about the firm ground outsoles, like very technical. And typically you start with those and you probably have like 2 to 3 testing rounds, each a couple of months. Yeah, and depending if you have like a very new innovation, you start even earlier, like it's a 5 years process, yeah, to do the early prototyping testing. If you have a known kind of outsole configuration, you can probably cut down some of those testing rounds, yeah, and you might end up with maybe only 2 testing rounds, sometimes even only 1. Yeah, so that obviously influences a lot your development timeline, the costs you have behind that, and the amount of players you have to involve. But typically, 2 to 3 rounds each around, you know, 3 months time. That's the average in the industry. And then you have dozens of players, not even hundreds of players, yeah, in your portfolio. And you do tons of testing with them. Mm. Yeah. Same goes then into the lab testing. Yeah, you would have then in Asia, for example, you will have facilities and they do all tons of testing. I remember also, you know, a special test that we had to develop because that chip in the boot here, you know, based on our insights of how players actually are using the boot, you know, after the game, they would go into the shower. Some players even take the boot, you know, and just shower with it more or less, you know what it is. And then now you have a chip inside that boot. You know, what happens when it's soaked from water? Yeah. So we had to do a washing machine tests and then all that kind of stuff. So sometimes you have to invent also new tests to make the shoe even better.
I remember when the official ball for, I think it was the 2010 South Africa World Cup, which had gone through the same testing process. And then when it was in South Africa, the ball was moving a little differently, and they were predicting, oh, maybe it was even because of the air pressure or even the altitude or different things. So it's amazing that how much testing we do, and still it's there's nothing beats than just those live moments of being able to test it on field and in the real world. So I've been getting a lot of great research from these and information from these podcasts. One of the things I always like to ask people is, storytelling is really associated with like an art form, so as a creative thing. And the more I've kind of dug into it, is more seeing it as a science. You know, usually people have got a similar process, they follow the same kind of steps. And obviously the beginning part of any kind of product story is a creative brief, where we actually think that's where we bring ideas and a chance to be creative. Do you consider yourself a creative person, or do these ideas that you've involved in product stories have come mainly from research or a process, or just randomly taking a shower or playing football or going for a run, they pop into your head?
Yeah, looking back at all the developments, I have to say, there might be some spark of creativity in one person, including me, but it's nothing in comparison to when you have like a strong team, a network, a community. So I would say creativity is something which is very important when you have it in your team.
Mm-hmm.
It can come from any side. But even more important is that you can have someone who has basically the skill to transfer that into a product.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the research is for sure changing. Yeah. So nowadays, and also my work today, data is a tremendous kind of source for creativity as well. If you have tons of data from millions of consumers, you start to have ideas which you had never before, you know. So I think that's a tremendous kind of resource that every good storyteller can tap into. So what we are doing, for example, is social listening. So we have fantastic tools, and you can crawl basically all the Insta feeds. And from there on, you can, you know, do segmentations, you can have like certain patterns, you can have with image recognition, certain kind of trends, if it's color or if it's like any kind of, you know, things mm-hmm. happening on the pictures and on the text as well. You take that, combine it with your internal data you might have from direct to consumer business, you know, from your members and your membership program. You have maybe some WhatsApp groups where people, you know, start to shoot at you some ideas, you know, because you intentionally ask them. Creativity, I think, is the whole process if you manage it kind of community well.
Yeah, it's interesting looking at that data points. You know, when you look at innovation, they say one of the key points of it, it's just a simple association, looking at one thing in one field and saying, oh, that would work great over here. And you know, you can imagine we're at the point now where algorithms can make those same associations. So you could have simple algorithms that can build product stories maybe better than any person. So that's an interesting world we're going to go into, where we're definitely going to challenge our understanding of creativity if an algorithm can bring out create 100 great songs or 100 great creative ideas. Putting you on the spot a little bit, is there any stories you've seen recently that you've been really blown away by? I think that most people I know who work in this industry love that, to look at maybe products outside of their realm and have a good understanding enough of marketing to recognize, even if it's a product they don't use, of the thinking of a brand that really knows who they are, who and is telling their story in a way that really resonates with their audience.
Yeah, you definitely put me on a spot.
Has to be creative now.
There is one story actually which impressed me a lot, and that's "Don't buy this jacket"
mm-hmm.
from Patagonia.
Yeah,
it's such a simple message, but what it does is actually telling a much bigger brand story. And even transcending that, it's a purpose story. So why is Patagonia doing what they are doing? Mm-hmm. If you take a look at their strategy, then the new CEO recently announced that he has a no growth strategy,
mm-hmm.
which is once again completely the opposite what you're used to know, what you're used to hear from all the big brands. Mm-hmm. They all tell you it's a growth strategy, and they tell you it's a no growth strategy. Mm-hmm. Transcending that or translating that into the product, you know, it's always about, you know, growing the business, having more colors on the market, having more shelf space, selling more products to the consumer. What Patagonia is doing is actually telling them, destroy our business, you know, don't buy us, you know, and I think that's one of the stories that really captures my attention, not only from the product perspective, because you can put any product into it.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have a proof on the product. Yeah, if you say, hey, our purpose is to reduce the impact of clothing on the environment, on the animals, on the planet, on people, you kind of have to prove that on the product, right? So it's not only about making that claim, but like really when you do such a strong claim, you have to stand up for it, and you have to be kind of bulletproof. Yeah, and there's a lot of people who are challenging that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but then once again, it's about how you tell the story. No, it's not about we know everything, and we do everything perfect, but we are on a way basically to fill our brand mission. And here is one proof point at this certain point in time, which is mm-hmm. this jacket. Yeah, but keep us, keep following us. Yeah, and if you need a jacket, for sure, this is one of the best ones, because you can be sure our brand promise is that we are working the hardest on that one. So I think that's a brilliant, brilliant story coming to life in a single product, but telling a much bigger story.
Yeah, I think it's a great example. And it shows that, you know, it's not necessarily even a creative story. We think, oh, you have to create something truly creative to stand out in the market, but you can also take a big stand. The reason why that story works so well and went so far is that nobody else is saying to it. And maybe for their own reason, it must be terrifying to a lot of brands, to the idea of no growth and the idea of telling the consumers to buy less. But I think that's why it goes so well with their brand identity. And that's why one of the key parts of storytelling before you even start that process is to start at that exact point of asking, well, what do we want to achieve and who are we as a brand? And I think Patagonia are an example of a brand who really know who they are and really know what they know what success looks like in their eyes. And that's what allows them to create stories like that, which are, you know, they don't have to spend a lot of time probably with big agencies to do that, because they're just stating the facts. And the story works so well is that those facts are so rare, and hopefully won't be so rare one day. But as a leader, that was such a great campaign. Really appreciate your time, Andy. It's been really insightful and really interesting to hear how you create stories now. So yeah, really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me today.
I appreciate for inviting me over, Elliot. And it was a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Great. Speak soon.